we've already done that. But if we didn't, it gives Brandon a tremendous negotiation of strength to talk to whoever the owner is and say, look, let's make a deal.
Well, Mr. Reeder, sure. So there was the permit issued, the MLRB permit issued.
Yes.
All right, and that was premised on a right to enter the property.
No, under the statute and the regulations, all that's required is a presentation at the time of the application for the applicant to show, to demonstrate what their authority is to enter the property at that time. There is nothing in the statute and regulations that requires that ownership, I'm sorry, that permission to be maintained continuously throughout the period that the MLRB permit is issued. And there's nothing in the statute and regulations that suggests that the permit would lapse if, you know, we permit would lapse. If for some reason the owner and the permittee had a falling out for a period of time, and the permittee had some sort of lack of access for a period of time, there's nothing in the MLRB statute or regulation that says that. The only thing it has to say is you have to show up at the beginning. There's nothing about names. The county regulations say nothing about ownership at the beginning or maintenance. And to me, that's what distinguishes this case critically from Brown and all the other cases, because in those cases they said you had to have owner consent. It doesn't say that here. It defines applicant as any person or entity that applies for a permit under these regulations. It would be incongruous for an applicant to be able to apply without owner consent, but not be able to seek judicial review.
Is there anything that would preclude your client from challenging a subsequent denial of a permit, like this is your permit, once all the, the ownership issues surrounding the property were adjudicated?
I'm sorry, I didn't follow the question.
Let me try, because I have the same question.
Good, okay.
Let's assume, and I'm asking you to waive anything, that we dismiss your permit, your 106A4 claim, simply as moot. It has become moot. Then you reestablish whatever might be required with the old owner, the new owner, whatever. Then you've got a right to enter the property. Can't you just reapply to the county?
Well, presumably I could. But
why wouldn't that be more efficient than going forward with this cloud of standing and mootness?
Well, the first reason is the county's changing regulations.
In a way that's less favorable to
the substantive requirements of the regulations are less different.
And more demanding?
I'm sorry?
And more demanding?
Probably, yes.
All right, then you answered my question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to reserve the rest of my time if I may.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Brad Benning. I'm the Assistant County Attorney for Gilpin County, and I appear here on behalf of the Gilpin County defendants. I'm going to be splitting my argument time with counsel for Blackhawk, Corey Hoffman. I'm going to take him about 7.5 minutes, hopefully.
And that will be up to you to monitor.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to first respond to one question that Mr. Reed did not have an answer for. Judge Webb, you asked if the deed was presumptive as to the rights, that Wolf's null and any rights. As Judge Berryhill correctly found, that's absolutely true. Citing the Ferguson case, the statute for foreclosure, once the foreclosure is complete, that severs all rights the Wolf's have. As Judge Berryhill also correctly noted, Mr. Wolf's case and appeal was dismissed with prejudice. He doesn't have any rights. And standing, the mere fact that you can pay $5 to file something with the clerk and recorder doesn't give him rights. Anybody can file that. You could file that. I can file that. Doesn't give us a legal right, a legally protected right. All it comes down to is speculation that the Wolves may have a claim, and we would argue if Mr. Wolf did that, that would be frivolous. Again, he was dismissed with prejudice. Again, Wolf's complaint in this case, his 106 action, was based on a specific agreements with the Wolf defendants to specific property. That interest is gone when the Wolfs lost their property on March 4th in the foreclosure proceeding. The public trustee issued a deed to the new owner, TCF Bank, on March 14th, 2011. 10 days later, Brandon filed its notice of appeal, which had no effect, because at that point, Brandon had no standing.
What about Brandon's assertion that the county's regulations do not require demonstration of a present ownership interest or access right in the property to pursue an SUR application?
That's simply not the law. In fact, Mr. Reardon's turns the law completely opposite.
Well, what, let's say, let's, not the law in general, but the regulations. Recognizing that it would practically make no sense. Could a stranger to property prosecute an SUR permit application under your regs?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
Because the county regulations, and as the what occurred here, and we dispute that our county regulations allow that, anyone to apply for special use. County regulations here are accompanied by an application process. That application process includes the requirement that they have landowner consent. That was originally complied with by Mr. Ridden's client, Brandon.
Well, what do you mean when you seem to be distinguishing between the regs and the application process? Where specifically does it require the applicant to have a demonstrated ownership or access right in the property?
Well, we would argue two things, Your Honor. First, the application is impliedly part of the implementation of the regulation. So they're one and the same. Again, that wasn't disputed by Brandon. They went through that process. Secondly,
what are you saying that when you fill out the application form, there's a question in there someplace that says
they have
describe your right of access?
Absolutely, they have to provide landowner consent.
Is that in the regs?
Is it expressly in the regs? And let me say, I would argue yes, because the reg referred to the application process as being a requirement, and the application process, the application itself, requires that you demonstrate landowner consent, provided that.
Is there anything specific in the regs that require ownership or landowner consent?
Nothing, because, Your Honor, as I think you specifically addressed, common law and common sense don't require it. And in fact, that's what the law agrees with. Common law and common sense is that special use proceedings are a discretionary function. There's not a constitutional, statutory, or even common law right to apply for special use. Completely discretionary on the county's part. Therefore, you have to look to the county regs themselves. And contrary to Mr. Ridden's argument, you don't have to. The county regs don't have to say exactly who has standing or who doesn't. They have to confer, or they would have to expressly confer standing, not the other way around, not that they don't mention that anybody has standing to do whatever under the regs. That's not the law. Reeves, Kornfeld, even Ainsborough, the law has to be clear, Ainsborough, the law has to be clear, and express grant of statutory authority has to be granted in the regs. That doesn't exist here. So the fact that, Your Honor, there's no express statement saying Brandon or these folks don't have standing to appeal this is not the issue. In fact, that's the point. They would need to expressly say Brandon, as a person who doesn't have, or a party who doesn't have an interest in the property, can apply for a special use permit. The statute, the regs don't allow that, Your Honor. So again, the law, consistent with Reeves and common law, there's no such grant of authority in the regs themselves, no express concurrence of standing.
Well, let me ask this a different way. Does special use run with the land?
Special use is, yes, Your Honor. Special use, they're tied to a specific parcel. As I stated here, this case was an application for a specific use on a specific property, here the Wolf's property originally. So again, it's ineluctably tied, and as the court, district court noted, the special use process and the MLRD permit itself are ineluctably tied to the rights of that specific property and the specific agreements they had with Wolf. So again, you can't separate the two in this case.
So does transfer of ownership of the land make a difference if the special use runs with the land itself?
Absolutely, yeah. And we would argue here that's the Wolf's, by losing title, that the authority they had from that they gave Brandon no longer existed, and they don't have that. And again, that's what their standing was based on, to pursue a special use permit and their alleged injury in this case, the ability to mine. Without that, they have no ability to mine. Your Honor, I believe I've used my time, so I'll have a seat and defer to Mr. Hoffman.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Corey Hoffman, registration number 24920, appearing this morning on behalf of the City of Blackhawk. Let me try to answer the question. I think that Justice Lichtenstein was asking about the regulation, the county regulation. And I point specifically to page 18 of the county's brief on this issue. In order to have standing under Rule 106A4, the regulation must confer, not vice versa. Here, no regulation of Gilpin County confers standing. Brandon has to point to a conferral of standing in the Gilpin County regulations to proceed, not vice versa. Accordingly, to begin with, they have to establish that standing. They have not. Here, it is undisputed that for a period of 21 months, Brandon had no property interest in the property issue in this proceeding. Brandon is seeking to have the standing analysis in Ainscough extended to a place no court has ever extended, because this case involves property. It doesn't involve some innocuous taxpayer interest. It doesn't involve any innocuous interest. It involves a right in property. Brandon could have cured in the foreclosure proceeding. It elected not to. The confirmation deed dated March 14th, 2011, cut off their property right. They had an opportunity in the chain of title to cure that. They elected not to do so and elected to attempt to proceed without the property right. Even based on the documents Brandon submitted after the case had come back to this court, after the remand to Judge Berryhill, even if you consider those documents confirm Brandon's property interest wasn't regained until December 7th, 2012. Again, 21 months after it lost it on March 14th, 2011. And 10 days prior, that March 14th, 2011 date is 10 days prior to the notice of appeal being filed in this case. So at the time this notice of appeal was filed, Brandon didn't have the property interest. This is an issue of subject matter jurisdiction. The burden of proof for subject matter jurisdiction is on Brandon. And once again, they knowingly filed a notice of appeal with this court without the property ownership.
But I need to come back to your initial point in response to Judge Lichtenstein's question. If Brandon satisfied the requirements of an applicant for SUR, and the regs don't say you have to have a present ownership interest, I don't understand what more Brandon would have to show to demonstrate standing.
The application form itself, and I don't have the cite of the record, shows consent to file the application.
But isn't that different from what the regs say?
That is Gilpin County's implementation of its own regulations, which I think, under established precedent, is entitled to deference by this court.
Are you saying the application form rises to the same level of dignity as what's in the regs?
It is implementation of the regs.
Well, yes. That doesn't really answer my question.
Well, I think the issue is there express conferral under the regs to allow Brandon, give Brandon standing in this case? The county has interpreted its regulations, which incorporates the application, to say you have to have an interest in property. Why else would the county waste its time processing the application without any sort of ownership interest? And to the extent it interprets its regulations through its application process to say you have to have a present interest, that is incorporated into its regulations.
Okay, thank you.
Because this is an appeal under 106A4, Brandon itself acknowledges the basis for this jurisdiction. If you look at the original complaint filed in this case in the district court, paragraph 12 of the original complaint specifically alleged that Brandon acquired, quote, an equitable interest in the property through purchase contract to buy the property, end quote. As of the date of the notice of appeal, again, March 24th, 2011, it no longer had the very equitable property interest it alleged in its complaint. Under the Brown case cited in the briefs, again, that is dispositive. If you look at the original allegations in the complaint, they no longer apply. They no longer apply to give Brandon standing because it lost the property. Under the City of Aspen case cited in the briefs, 855 P. 2nd 22, Court of Appeals 1993, because the right of appeal follows the property interest and Brandon lost the property interest, the right to appeal in this case is lost. Again, in Brandon's own supplemental opening brief, pages 6 through 8, it acknowledges the foreclosure action and then says it has a property right both from the Wolf defendants, which I think you addressed with Mr. Reardon, and one that, quote, derives from TCF, end quote. Fatally absent from that argument is any interest in the property for the 21-month period when TCF had ownership of the property and Brandon had none. So the second question is, does an MLRP permit standing alone authorize the permittee to enter the property? Enter the property or mine without the owner's consent? Because isn't that really what Brandon is saying? The answer to that question should be self-evident and must be no. CRS section 34-32.5, section 112, sub 1, sub C, sub 4, requires a mining permit applicant to identify the source of the legal right to enter the property and initiate a mining operation. That is precisely the right we're talking about here, the property right Brandon lost on March 14, 2011. Just as a property right to mine is not enough standing alone without an MLRB permit, such a permit requires a corresponding right to enter. Effectively, there are three legs to the stool. The mining permit, the reclamation permit, the right to enter the property, and then the land use approval. Each of those three are required to actually perform the function. Here, Brandon is arguing about the zoning approval, the SUR permit, without having the property right to enter in the first instance.
Well, Mr. Reardon had argued that the initial requirement that you establish a property right doesn't equal a continuing right to enter the property. So even if you got the permit and you established it at the outset that you have the property right, you don't have to do a continuing proof that you have a right to enter the property. So I'd like you to respond to that.
I would respond to it this way. There is absolutely no case that I could find that stands for either the proposition that you can continue to pursue an appeal without the appropriate rights, or that such an appeal can be revived. The cases that Mr. Reardon cites talk about capacity to sue. Someone had standing at all times. You were substituted in, you had a right assigned to you. But there is nothing, no case that I could find that stands for the proposition that standing can be revived, which is exactly what Mr. Reardon is seeking here, to have the right to enter the property lost for 21 months, regained on December 7th, 2012, but having no linkage during that 18 or 21 month period where the rights that Brandon is seeking could have been enjoyed.
What exactly happened in December of 2012?
On December 7th, 2012, Brandon entered into a contract with the person that acquired the property from TCF Bank.
Is that document properly in the record, or is it just stuck to somebody's brief?
It is stuck to someone's brief, and truthfully, Your Honor, we don't want this case to go back to the trial court again. It's been going on long enough. But to the extent the court wants to consider that, that only reinforces the arguments in this case that Brandon had no interest for 21 months, no interest in property. For this court to find in Brandon's favor, it would have to find that standing can be revived. And there is simply no case that stands for that proposition. Thank you.
Mr. Reardon, before you begin, would you answer a question I have? Would you address the county and Blackhawk's position that the application process and the application terms are incorporated by reference into the regulation?
Certainly. There's nothing in the application form that says that. There's nothing in the regulation that says that. And let's think about that for a minute. The regulation says nothing about owner consent. And now they want to say that that's a requirement? That's a pretty substantial change. It's not like it's some sort of, you know, procedural thing. Especially when you look at other regulations that have been looked at by the Colorado courts. Where those regulations say, you got to have owner consent, that's what the court says, you got to have owner consent. If you don't have to have owner consent, you don't have to. Let's look at Reeves, the Reeves case. The Reeves case, the land use code was very detailed, and it gave the applicant the right to appeal. It also gave persons of other interested persons the right to appeal. Guess who's in the list of other interested persons? Owners. Now, I don't know what that said, but it seems to me that the land use code actually distinguished between applicants and owners and gave them both the right to appeal. It didn't follow that the applicant had to have the owner consent. So to take the leap that the application somehow amends the regulation, I think it's pretty tough, because that's a pretty significant legislative change to the regulation.
What about not amending but supplementing?
Again, when you change the language of the regulation, all the regulation says right now is it defines an applicant as any person or entity that applies for a permit under this regulation. Any person or entity. And then SUR applications in Section 6 says nothing about who can apply. So implementing by basically modifying the definition of applicant to be any person or entity that has an ownership in the property, that's a big change. That's a legislative fix. They can do that, but it can't be interpreted to include it, because you know that's just not there.
You may proceed.
I have 6 seconds. Let me just close by saying that the starting point for the appellees is that Brandon has to have at all times a property interest to go forward with the SUR permit application. I would ask you to look at the regulation, to look at the cases, and say, where is that requirement?
I think your time is exhausted, Colin.
Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. Written opinion will issue in due course.